Hi, you're listening to Petri.com's MJF Chat Show. I am Mary Jo Foley, aka your Petri.com community magnet, and I'm here to ask industry experts about various topics that you, our readers, want to know about. So today's MJF Chat is all about the Microsoft Graph, and specifically what IT pros need to know about it. My guest today is Yina Arenas, Principal Program Manager for the Microsoft Graph. She also happens to be known as the mother of the graph. Thank you so much for joining us, Yina.
Thank you so much, Mary Jo, for having me in the show.
Great. So I'm going to jump right in because we have a number of questions. And I wanted to start out by asking you, if you wouldn't mind, to give us a quick recap of the history of the graph, because I think some of the Petri.com readers and listeners may not be as familiar with the graph as I am, because I've written quite a bit about it. But where did the graph come from, and when and why was it built?
Okay, so let's start with what is the graph, and then I'll give a little bit of the history about it. Okay. So Microsoft Graph is the gateway to data and intelligence in Microsoft 365. It gives a unified programmability model so that developers can access the tremendous amount of data across Office 365, Windows 10, and the Enterprise Mobility and Security Suite. And in terms of how it got started, it actually was a few years back. So Microsoft Graph is the result of a journey that we at Microsoft have been going through. Before moving our own services to the cloud, our own programmability models were tied to each of the individual products. So it wasn't very easy or intuitive to build experiences that went across. So for us, in order to create the experiences, the kind of people-centric experiences that we envisioned, we needed to create a platform that could realize them. So We started working on Microsoft Graph and driving consolidation of our APIs and our data models. And it started with a few services. So it started within Office, with Exchange and SharePoint, and then also Azure Active Directory, which is the service that we use to store all of the information about users and groups. And today, I will say over a few dozen teams across different product teams across Office 365 and Windows and EMS, which is the Enterprise Mobility and Security Suite, expose their data in Microsoft Graph. So it is a tremendous amount of data, fabric of data from our customers that has been consolidated to power the set of experiences that we build. Mm-hmm. And at Build, we announced that not only we have the API, which is the way that developers interact with it, but also Data Connect, which is a kind of new way to enable analytic applications.
Good. But so I'm definitely going to ask you more about Data Connect as we get into this, because I think it's very interesting where you're going with that. So that's great. That's a really good level set for us to start with. I've been kind of trying to explain this in my writing lately, and I bet other people have this question too. But how does the Microsoft Graph fit in with other kinds of graphs of data that Microsoft has? Like I'm thinking like LinkedIn specifically.
So Microsoft Graph, as I mentioned before, exposes data for Microsoft 365 services. Mm-hmm. And at this point in time, Microsoft and the LinkedIn businesses have made the call to keep separate their partner ecosystems and models. Okay. So LinkedIn has a program and has an API that partners can apply to access the data from the LinkedIn service. And Microsoft Graph is accessible to every partner for which Microsoft customer grants them access, right? Like, so mm-hmm. if we have a user that is customer for a Microsoft 365, then they have the ability to grant a developer or an application access to their data in the graph.
Okay, got it. Is it correct to call the graph, the Microsoft Graph, one API, or is it multiple APIs?
So it's actually thousands of APIs.
Right, okay.
I don't know, more than 500,000 resources described on the API. It's a lot. It's a lot. And each of them have the APIs that enable to create and read and update and delete operations. And so all of these resources, I will say that actually you know, because it's so many data and all of these different set of products that are part of it, that one of the hardest things that we've accomplished with Microsoft Graph is having that consistency and establishing the patterns that teams across Microsoft use to design those APIs. So those consistent conventions across like naming and casing and errors and URL structures and headers, functions and more, they just like enable, like the important thing is that they, at the end result is that developers can leverage the learning curve. So for example, when they learn how to interact with one resource in the graph, that knowledge automatically transfers to any other resource. And when I say a resource, I just want to clarify so that is concrete, that I mean files and calendar events and conversations and security alerts and devices and all of the different set of data structures that we have in the graph.
Okay, that's good. I think I get confused about this because when Microsoft talks about it, they say the Graph API sometimes. And so I know that there's like supposed to be common endpoints and you can interact with it, I think, by SDKs, APIs. And so I was a little confused how people should think about it conceptually.
So it is a unified endpoint. It's hosted under graph.microsoft.com. Okay. And we have SDKs that provide experiences, tailored experiences for developers in different languages, in .NET, in Java, in JavaScript, and Node, and Objective-C. So depending on what environment and what type of application they're building, they'll have tailored experiences for them. But it is a unified endpoint that has access to all of this data, right?
Okay.
So that's why we call it the graph.
Like one thing, right?
Yeah, it's like one thing. Yeah.
Okay. Now I'm going to ask a question from one of the Petri.com forum participants, Stephanie Madrid, who says, I'd like to know what some of the things are that are enabled by the Microsoft Graph API. Like, can you give us some examples of things that I might know about that exist today that will give me a better picture of what the graph can do?
Absolutely. So I think that if we start by the definition of this interconnected fabric of data that contains the resources that I was talking about, right? Like mail, calendar, files, activities, tasks, groups. I'll say that there are two big components of the graph. The first one is what it enables Microsoft to do. So Microsoft Graph enables us to build people-centric experiences across Microsoft 365. For example, imagine you're in Word, and being able to add mention a person right there in the Word document and assign a task to the person without leaving the flow, right? Like that is powered by the Microsoft Graph. And the second important thing is that what it enables for our partners and for our ecosystem. So it offers, as we were discussing, this unified endpoint that they can use to get access to all of the data for these services across Microsoft 365. And not just the data, but also some of the calculated insights and relationships that we produce on our intelligent engine, right? Like, and enable them to create these intelligent experiences, which can be extending one of the experiences that we, one of the canvases that we have, like for example, having an app that shows in Outlook and enables you to do smart scheduling, or writing their own applications, like for example, a web application or a mobile application. So that's what that set of things that are enabled through the graph.
Okay, that's good. I don't know if you can do this in words. I'm just thinking of this now because a lot of times when I talk about these kinds of concepts, I always ask people for an architectural diagram because I kind of think in diagrams. So I'm curious if you can, if I was going to draw a picture of where the graph sits in the architectural stack, could you explain, like, here's the bottom layer, here's the next layer, here's the next layer?
Okay, let's try. Let's try to imagine this mental picture. So I'll say that on the bottom of the picture of this layer cake is Microsoft Identity. So it all starts with the identity of the user that is a customer for Microsoft services, whether it is across our commercial offerings, that is for our business offerings, or for work for a school, or for our consumer users, right? Like the ones that have OneDrive Consumer or Outlook.com accounts. So it starts with that layer. So the identity layer is the underpinning of our platform.
Okay.
Then the next layer is the data. So it's all of the data that we have across the different services. I was talking about mail data and calendar data and a task, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of that, we have the interfaces that allow access to the data, Microsoft Graph being that interface. And you can think about the next layer will be the services that we provide. So it is the calendar services or search or I'll say like emailing or mm-hmm. the services around security like ATP. So all of the services that are built on top of the data.
Okay.
And then the layer on the top will be the experiences. So this is what our users will interact with, right? Like whether it is an experience that we provide or an experience that our partners tailor, right? Like mm-hmm. because that's the big opportunity that is here, which is like tailoring those experiences that we build for, I will say, a very general public, mm-hmm. right? Like the same Microsoft 365 experiences that K-12 and school will use are the same that will be used across industry verticals in legal or marketing or retail, mm-hmm. right? Like mm-hmm. we don't customize them for the specific needs, but right. that's where the partners come, right? Like they are that last mile that customize those experiences and help, you know, drive that tailored set of experiences that are needed for our customers. Mm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's
so
good.
That's the layer cake.
That's awesome. That help that I don't know if it helps other people, but that helps me a lot. So I was at Build last week in Seattle, and a word that kept coming up a lot in different meetings I had and in different presentations I saw was substrate.
Mm-hmm.
I kept hearing people say, you know, there's a substrate that's underlying Office 365, Microsoft 365, and some people called it like a knowledge bank or a knowledge base.
Yeah.
It seemed to be kind of key with the whole people-centric concept that Microsoft is pushing now. But what does substrate have to do with the graph? Anything?
Yes, absolutely. So substrate is an internal name that we have for the place where a lot of the data sets, capabilities, and services that power the intelligent insights and all of that AI machine mm-hmm. learning technologies that are being applied, that's where we build these experiences. And Microsoft Graph is the gateway to that, right? Like, so okay. the data that you will find in the substrate is the same data that is exposed through the Microsoft Graph.
Mm, okay. Mm-hmm. There's another concept I'm familiar with on the Dynamics side of the house, which they call the common data model, mm-hmm. Which I kind of think of as a place to store all this kind of data too, but I'm curious if there's any correlation or potential correlation between what's going on the Dynamics side with CDM and what's going on with the graph on the other side.
Yeah, so graph has a set of defined resources.
Okay.
And so, for example, we have the schema for, as I was mentioning before, those core resources that drive productivity and that are anchored to each of the products that are part of the Microsoft 365 umbrella, right? Like we've mm-hmm. talked about Office 365 and all of the mm-hmm. products that are part of Office 365. We talked about Windows and the Windows services and then Enterprise Mobility and Security Suite. So that, I will say that those are set and defined set of resources and the schema that they already have.
Okay.
Whereas in CDM, the partners have an opportunity to define their own schema. And then also there is the whole initiative around open data
mm-hmm.
that where that common schema is being established across different partners, right? Like with SAP and Adobe.
Right.
And mm-hmm. Being like the important there is like, how do we make sure that when we're talking about a specific entity or a specific resource, we're all talking about the same way, right?
Mm-hmm.
Driving
mm-hmm.
consistency and coherence, which both CDM and Graph have as a mantra, I will say.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I mean, would there be any case where there would be an overlap between the two? If say, I'm thinking like in the case of the graph, sometimes you have customer data and they have customer data also.
Mm-hmm. Yes, there could be scenarios where you will use both in your application.
Mm, okay. All right. Another thing to add to my mental map. another thing that came up at Build last week, and you briefly addressed this at the beginning, was the Data Connect piece of the graph that
yes.
was an announcement last week at Build. Could you talk a little more in depth about what that is and why that's a big deal?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So remember when we talked about that layer of data, right?
Right.
And the first thing, the first interface that we exposed was a set of APIs that enable you to get access to real-time data. So think about very transactional. I want to know what are the top high important emails on my inbox right now, right?
Right.
And Microsoft Graph Data Connect is a set of tools that provide a new interface and then allow developers to get managed access to the data at scale. So it's not, I'm just not going to get a single point in time, but I'm going to get for a window of time. And I don't have like these tools that including Microsoft Graph Data Connect provide, give the ability for developers to, with no code, just configuration, and that's one of the tools that is provided, securely an automated migration of that data into Azure. And once the data is in Azure, then you can use Azure tooling, like all of the AI and ML toolset that Azure offers, to do an analysis on that data. And then to derive and generate your own insights. And not only it has that secure migration to Azure, which remains in the customer's boundary, but also it allows administrators to manage the very granular, the type of data that is moved. So for example, if we go with email, so say we want to move all of the email for a given group, let's say the marketing group, and we want to know if they're collaborating, right? Like, so we'll move that email, but we just want to know, we don't necessarily want to know who sent it. We only want to know subjects and bodies. So we can do that granularity and decide like what are the set of dimensions of the data that we're going to move to Azure and allow the administrator to control that. So that is at the nutshell what Microsoft Graph Data Connect is.
So it's all, is it specific to insights or can you do other things with Data Connect beyond that?
You could do other things. That it enables different set of scenarios, right? Like basically it gives organizations the opportunity to tap into large data sets and they can power whether it insights or intelligent workflows or organizational optimization or like, for example, looking, scanning for fraud and security. Like there are many scenarios that you could use once you have that data addressed. Okay. Yeah.
That's good. Speaking of security, we have a security question from Greg Alto. He asked, can you talk a bit about the security of the graph? It contains a lot of sensitive data. And I've always been curious about how Microsoft protects users' data in such a rich pool of content from abuse by outside parties.
Yes, that's a very important question. So I'll say that the prime message here is that it is customers' data, right? Like all of the data that is stored in Microsoft Graph, it either belongs to an organization or belongs to the individual users. And privacy and security of our customers' data is the most important thing for us. I'll say all of the intelligence features within Microsoft 365 strictly respect the access rights given by a user. And we will not expose the information to anyone who has not been given access. Mm-hmm. So when you have a third-party application, they must explicitly request access to that data. And the users, if they have the rights to give access to that data, they will be able to consent to it. Otherwise, like it will be up to the administrators to consent to give access to that data. Mm-hmm. And then the company administrators have the ability to take full control on what the applications can be used with in their organization, right? Like, so whether or not users are permitted to consent, whether or not their users are permitted to acquire applications, and they can even, you know, control all of the apps that have access at any point in time to data in their organization, and then they can revoke this access at any point in time. Mm-hmm. So the security, like I said, is a, you know, very, very important for us. And there is very granular controls that the users and administrators have over the data.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Okay. Good to know. So you've addressed the question I had, which is the graph applicable to both business data and consumer data? It sounds like yes on both.
Yes. So
this may be a crazy question, but given that at Build, Microsoft is now talking about three clouds. They're talking about the productivity cloud, the AI cloud, and gaming cloud. Is there any use for this at all in gaming?
Well, you're right. Graph is for both consumer and commercial services. And today, it actually, on the consumer side, is it exposes the user profile information that we, the same that is used for our gaming services.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So when you sign up to Xbox Live with your Outlook.com account, that's the same information that is exposed on the consumer side of the Microsoft Graph. Now, we don't have at this point in time any other data from the gaming services, but in the future, it might expose, I don't know, like what will be in stake for us to surf on that. But yeah.
Yeah, so it's not out of the question.
It's not out of the question.
So it's not a crazy question.
No.
Cool. Okay. So getting towards the wrap up here, I think Tina had a good potential last question. She said, okay, if you're a developer, I understand what the appeal of the graph is and you know why I would need to know about this concept and the APIs and all. But if you're an IT pro, what's your stake in the game here and how should you start learning about this? Like, what do you recommend IT pros need to learn or do or know about the graph at this point?
Yeah, so I'll say that Microsoft Graph is here to alter the landscape of productivity for everyone. So developers and users and IT pros are directly impacted by the experiences that are powered by the Microsoft Graph. For users, we already talked about, you know, the set of experiences that can be built. For developers, we talked about the opportunity for them to build those experiences. And for IT pros, I think that there is an important aspect around the control that it gives them. So for apps that are easier to deploy and manage because they are integrated with the graph, they can, as I was mentioning before, they can control at all times what applications have access to the data in their organization. They can assign applications to specific users or groups. They can manage those. And furthermore, like with offerings like Microsoft Cloud App Security, they can get detailed information of the apps that publishers understand and classify and protect the exposure of sensitive information. So if you think about, you know, what we used to have in the past, where IT pros or no, where users in an organization were getting customizations or were getting applications that were freely given access to their data, right? Like, because Microsoft Graph has such tight security controls, it gives more control to the IT admin onto what their users can do with their applications and what data they can actually grant consent for.
Okay, that's interesting. Great. Well, thank you, Yina. This was really helpful. I hadn't talked to you in a couple years, I think, about the graph, and there's a lot of things that have changed. So I really appreciate you giving us time here and sharing more insights. So thanks.
Absolutely. Thank you for inviting me.
You're welcome. And we'll be back in a couple of weeks with our next guest on MJF Chat. So make sure that you watch for that. I'll be posting who it's going to be in the forums on petri.com. And that's your signal, listeners, to send in your questions in the MJF Chat forum area. With regard to this chat with Yina, look for the audio recording and the transcript of this, as with all our chats, on the petri.com site in the near term. Thank you very much.